Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
Hello once again, this is Coach Chuck Griese, and it's another week of American Tennis. And folks, I've been doing politics of tennis so much that today I'm going to get away from it a little bit and try to go another avenue and get back into the instructional part of it, the part that is really, really fun. The politics stuff, it has to be done, but daggone is it grinding me down. And I'm going to hang in there for those of you who follow our show and follow what we're doing to fight the ITA and to battle this Civil War tennis that we've got started here. I guess all we would need is a Fort Sumter of some type or another, and it would be full bore. And golly, all last year or the year before, it seemed like it was the green ball and the red ball stuff and all that and the 10 and under tennis. And that still goes on. I mean, that mandate has been made, and everybody agrees that they sort of pushed the edge of the envelope. It was sort of mandating that. Daggone, it's United States of America, and people don't like to be mandated, especially in a sport that we love. With that, the college thing this last 2 to 3 years has just been so overwhelming with the coercive leadership, and I don't even want to say leadership shown by the ITA. They've just been bullies, and that's that simple. And if you're with the ITA, they're call in, so let's talk and debate this. I know one coach who likes NOAAD is said he was going to call in, and I'm going to have him on the show here this next week. A very good friend of mine, with a former ACC coach, where I coached, and we're going to try to do that maybe next week or something like this. But I was on JP Weber's We Coach Tennis last night. Go to that on the We Coach Yellow Ball Network. We Coach Tennis, JP Weber's show of yesterday, which was February the 24th. And wow, what a debate we had! And I went over my 13. I call them the 13 contaminants from NOAAD scoring on our game. The 13 contaminants of our game, and they are contaminants. And I will go over those very, very quickly here for you, just to give you a few thoughts. Last week's show, 1 week ago today, February the 28th, or excuse me, the 18th. Go to that show. You can go to chuckcreasy.net and get my American Tennis show. Just punch it up, or you can go to the UR Tennis Network and punch up the episodes from February 18th, 2015, and you can get the entire program and also J.P. Weber's program over the 13 contaminants. But again, folks, I want to go back into the instruction. I'm just going to read briefly the 13 contaminants here, but basically the one point, first of all, our history, our heritage, we should be trying to protect it. That's number one, and I go into that. And then I go into detail about how one point is really worth two games in NOAAD scoring. Tennis is a constant reversal of offense to defense to offense to defense. It's the only sport of its kind. It's like boxing, where you give up offense to counter and then try to, you have play defense or offense both, and it's the skills that it takes is incredible. But really, one point is worth two games. The artificial parity is number three that is promoted without skill set, and there's a reason why this is being promoted, folks. It's being promoted by some of the teams, maybe the indoor teams and things, that don't know how to construct points. Ball striking is different than point playing. So the parity is immediate here, and boy, does it hurt those players who construct points instead of just slap balls. And that's predominantly what was brought up on J.P. Weber's program last night. Well, that's why it is being shown right now, the women who dislike it so much, because most of the time women's tennis, you have to construct points. Eliminating of the war zones. Boy, we got in a great discussion on war zones and the critical factor that it takes three in a row to start the flow. Three in a row starts the mo. Three in a row. Three in a row is incredibly important. We're going to talk about that this morning as we talk about momentum control. But tennis is a game based on threes. If you don't win the first point of the game, you have to win three out of four or four out of 5 points at some point. If you don't develop that skill as a youngster, as a tennis player, it doesn't matter how well you hit the ball or if you can win points now and then. You've got to be able to group points. That's the beautiful thing about our game. And with number five, with that, with just 4 to 7 points being played every time, it's the same sets, the same skill sets. And I brought up the point last night. Could you imagine if you told us we had, people said you had to end a rally within 6 rallies. You had to end between 2 and 6 rallies. And of course, serve and return, and then between 6 rallies. Well, we're doing that with our scoring system, and we discussed that quite in detail. Random momentum swings, we talked about, I think was number 7. Do you realize that the 30 love lead is 16-1 odds, that you have a game point, or in the 30-15 lead is an 8-1 odds that you have a game point? The random momentum swings that happen because of NOAAD scoring and not because of skill set are definitely a contaminant of our game. And it really, the momentum is critical. We're going to talk about it today, but the momentum, the intrigue, the depth, the drama, number 8, we talked about the drama. The drama is eliminated from our sport. People talk about excitement. I'll make this statement. I made it last night. Excitement dwindles with each occurrence, while drama intensifies with each denial. Right now, folks, we have an Alfred Hitchcock movie being played every time that someone goes to the tennis court. The drama is incredible. The ability to sustain momentum and to keep carry leads is a skill set in its own. When we don't allow our children to play regular scoring, traditional scoring, they never ever develop this skill set. And when people talk about excitement, oh, that's foolishness. That's like a child riding a roller coaster at a amusement park. It's exciting the first time, second time, sort of exciting. By the third time, they say, where's the Ferris wheel? Let's go on to something else. This isn't quite exciting enough. Excitement dwindles with each occurrence, like a slasher movie that you see, and it's scary the first time, and it's laughable by about the fourth time you see the slashing. Alfred Hitchcock movies, I've got to say, hey, has anybody out there ever seen the movie Notorious? If you want to see a great Alfred Hitchcock movie that scares the bejeebies out of you. See Notorious. It's post-World War II. Claude Rains and Ingrid Bergman, and I think it was Cary Grant, or might have been, yeah. It was incredible, incredible movie. And so those are the things, our sport, the depth is just so deep in our sport. Number eight, I think we said it eliminates conditioning, of course, in the fighting factor, and that's just a shame. You know, people who get in shape and are good fighters can become good tennis players, and we're just making it sort of machine-like, serves and nerves of the indoor tennis and no ad scoring. Number nine, a big one in the coaching is the barometer that we see in our coaching, an accurate barometer for where our kids are at, is gone because of the randomness and the momentum swings and the skews of who wins and who loses. And last night we brought up a lot of examples of teams that have gone down or unfortunately because of no ad already this spring, and teams that really get artificial parity or immediate parity because of it. Gosh, a big one. Folks, it will not sustain anything that is a gimmick for some popularity, will not sustain those things in the depth that we want. Everybody should understand that gimmicks don't work. They sustain, they're trying to manipulate. When you manipulate instead of inspire people, it will not sustain. Oh, golly, it's just so painful when you see what's going on with our sport. Players don't like the daggone thing. And 88% of the women said no, 77% of the men, 82% of the women coaches, and like 54% of the men. It does not sustain interest. The players want to play checkers. They don't want to play chess. And I believe those are about 13 out of 14, but really, when it comes down to it, don't we just owe the game a lot? Don't all of us just owe the game a lot? And shouldn't we uphold the traditions and the heritage and the sacredness of this game? And it is. It's almost like a very devout religion for a lot of us. Religion is not spirituality, by the way, folks. You say somebody's religious, that's not exactly being spiritual, but tennis can be almost a religion for a lot of us because it means so much to our lives that it's been here, and we need to honor the game and honor the game. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, is the cheating ramped up with the daggone no ad scoring. Players recognize it's a two-game swing every time you win one of those no ad points. And it is somewhat laughable. No, it's somewhat sad that the ITA / the USTA is behind this. Most of us understand that as well, that they're trying to shorten everything. But it's really perturbing. It's really sad to see people being so simplistic in their thinking, saying that this is going to save tennis. This is at very worst, best, you might get a few fans that are fly-by-nighters, and then in the long run, you're going to lose your real tennis fan. And in the long run, you just hurt our sport. In the long run, our kids have checkers and not chess. That's my quick synopsis of last week and last night's program. And if you want to listen to them, you can go to the UR Tennis Network and listen to American Tennis from last week, or go to the Yellow Ball Network, Coach J.P. Weber. We coach tennis. He has over 1,700 members now on the We Coach Tennis Facebook, and boy, that's a great medium. Looks like a lot of people are going to that these days. Hats off to Lisa Stone's program, Parenting Aces, and what a wonderful article she wrote this week in her blog. Go and read it, about the international recruiting going on and how we ought to be addressing that. And even you international guys out there know, guys and gals, know that you have gotten the greatest gift ever from our country in being able to come here and hit tennis balls over the net and get a tremendous amount of money and education and opportunity and all those things for hitting a tennis ball. And you know, God bless each and every one of you. And I've recruited international players with my programs at Clemson. And, you know, over the years, and I've had some great ones. I got to train under the great Harry Hopman. Where would we be without his tutelage and his mentorship? Where would we be without the great Dennis Vandermeer? Where would we be without the great Robert Lansdorp and some of the wonderful, wonderful people we've had come from other countries, Jose Higueras and all the rest? But where would we be without these guys? But at the same time, we have basically abused the system of allowing foreign students to take up now 90% was the statistic given to me last night on the We Coach Tennis program in the We Coach Tennis radio show. 90% for Division II. Amazing. And 70% now in Division I. So it makes sense if you're a parent. I'm a parent. Why are we going to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to get our kids training? I mean, it's expensive. Even me, I can work with my kids all the time, but I still have to pay for tournaments. You still have to pay for the travel. You still have to pay for all this. Well, why would we do this? My son got to play baseball. He got 25 games last spring for $35 registration fee, and it was tremendous. Why would I spend $3,500 or $35,000 for tennis? You know, it just does not make any sense. It's got to be something uplifting, something great. At least when I send my daughter to ballet, I believe they're playing Mozart and Schubert or, you know, whatever they play for ballet. I think that more Tchaikovsky and things like that. They'd be playing that. They're not going to be playing some hoopla shortened version of jazz or something and diluting, polluting, and prostituting the music there just in order to have popularity. I sent her to ballet for a reason. We put our kids into tennis for a reason. We want something much deeper than surface, and we're dumbing it down. Tennis down, dumbing it down never works. Dumbing down never, ever, ever will sustain some greatness. We need to look at our sport like that. So, anyhow, this is American Tennis with Coach Chuck Creasy, and that was my 15-minute monologue to start the program today. And, again, that's the political part. Folks, we've got a lot. Dive in there. We tell you at American Tennis that it is your duty to stand up and to speak out. It's your duty, not just your right as American. It's your duty, your obligation to say what needs to be said. Do it in a kind way. Address issues, not people. You can talk about organizations. I'm going to talk about the USTA, the ITA, and these organizations. We can talk about organizations all we want. If you just don't get personal, address issues, not people, and no one can find fault. Edmund Burke says that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. And people get afraid. It's just amazing to me how fearful people are. And to tell you the truth, it takes some guts to stand up and to speak out. But at the end of the day, what else have you got if you don't stand up and speak out for those things you believe in? Don't you want your children to feel that way? Don't you want your children to grow up being strong enough to stand up and to speak out because they're an American? Our freedoms, the right freedom of speech, the freedom of our faith, the freedom to worship, freedom from want, freedom from fear. Go look at Norman Rockwell's pictures and how beautiful, beautiful those are. Look up Norman Rockwell on that internet and see those beautiful pictures of the man standing up at a city hall meeting and his freedom of speech. And we have that in this country, and we need everyone to exercise it. And at the very, very best, we can get people to address issues in a debatable forum in a way that it makes sense, where we can bring get people to start thinking about them in a deeper emotion, or excuse me, in a different way than just emotion. We need people to think about the issues much deeper. So stand up and speak out. My website is chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net. And you can get all my shows. My books that I've written are there. Information about the camps I do in the summertime are there. Contact me if you have questions. And I'm glad to always give you my opinion, my beliefs, what I think. And at the end of the day, folks, you need to stand up for what you believe in. And by golly, I'm going to be battling this no-ad stuff. I believe that if we don't take a stand now, we are destined for a long, cold winter of tennis. And they don't think it can get worse. It can get a lot worse than it is right now. Hoopla shows will not sustain. We'll be right back with American Tennis. It's Chuck Creasy.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net.
Chuck Creasy, and we are making them in America, and be proud to be an American. Stand up, speak out. American Tennis is one of those forums where you are allowed to do that. And if you want to call in today, call area code 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. We're talking momentum control and match flow tactics. And look, I'm very happy and honored to be able to give you a synopsis and talk to you about momentum control. I've always looked at a person's ability to control momentum, either instinctively or, having to learn it, something that's developmental, as probably the definitive skill of an athlete that really allows them to master their craft at the highest level. Since 1979, I've been on a quest, that's 35 years, to try to come up with some simple ways of mastering the levels of momentum control. Every sportscaster in a broadcast will talk about the momentum switching, and they'll talk about a 9-0 run or what the momentum now has gone with this team or another team. Tennis is the ultimate game of momentum, and it is a beautiful, beautiful thing to watch what happens. And when you have the momentum, it almost looks as if you can do things with the player can do things with such ease that they it just comes quite natural. And if you don't have the momentum, it's an uphill battle. You know, now it's always usually overlooked at the lower levels. Most of the time at the lower levels, we speak about the physical aspects of the game, the forehands and the backhands and the serve and the movement and all of these things, the conditioning. And that's your base. That's just the physical part of the game. The mental part of the game is a part of the game. The emotional part of the game is the game. And any of you who have read my books, by the way, Coaching Tennis is still out there. Go see Coaching Tennis. Google it. Or go to Amazon Books. You can still get them. And Coaching Tennis is Total Tennis Training was my first book back in 88. In all my books in tennis, I break it down into the physical, the mental, and the emotional part of the game. But at the elementary levels, when we first start kids out, we're talking about the physical part. Now, the physical part of the game quickly becomes somewhat the mental part of the game, which we refer to as, in two breakdowns, I break it down into shot selection, and I got to credit Paul Wardlaw with the Wardlaw Directionals. For years, this has been one of the best bases to teach youngsters. Go to Paul Wardlaw's, I think his book is called Competitive Tennis. It's a daggone good book, and it's solid. But the Wardlaw Directionals I've used those for 20 years with young kids. I also go to a program called Three-Dimensional Tennis that takes in not just the shot selection across the body, into the body, or down the line, the three sections, the three opportunities you have, outside angles, inside angles, or 90-degree change of direction, as Wardlaw talks to them about. I also take into consideration the different areas of the court, somewhat like the zones five that the Canadians did years ago. Remember the zone fives and the color-coded zone fives. But I do three-dimensional tennis where I break the court into nine zones where players know exactly what they're doing with their shot selection. Well, after that, it has to do it's what play do you run, and that's the momentum control. So the physical part is really the how part of the game. The mental part of the game is the where. And the momentum part is the why, the where, and then the when. When do I attack? When do I grind? When do I counter? And the momentum part really teaches you, the momentum strategies really teach you when to bump up your intensity, either the pace with you play, the tactics you use, or just really your emotional engaging. You know, you basically, the momentum, the best players know when to ramp it up and when to chill it out. But until you get to the 90th percentile, a lot of players don't even look at this. When you get to the 90th percentile or above, it makes all the difference between being proactive and decisive instead of being reactive with doubt. And that's a simple statement, but it's very in depth. You need in tennis be proactive and decisive instead of reactive with doubt. And momentum control is the skill set that players need to get over the hump. And once their physical abilities are locked in, their shot selection is good. And I forgot to mention the physical, the mental, the emotional part. The emotional part becomes the why and basically being clutch. So, again, the physical part is the how. The mental part is the where and the when. And the emotional part is the why. And you've got to answer the why comes first. There's a beautiful book out right now. And let's see, what is the name of that book? It's Why Comes First, I believe, by Simon Sinek, I think it is. And, folks, that's a beautiful book. But in living your life, why, if you can figure out why you're doing something, the why always does come first. And, you know, so the emotional part has to do with the why, but then also being clutch. And everybody knows how important being clutch is, and they look at it if it's something magical. But it isn't. It's something that you can learn if you work at it. And everybody's wired a little differently, but being wired differently means you just have different challenges. And it is true that some laid-back people are more clutch, and their blood runs a little smoother. Some people are more emotional and have to work at it in different ways. But you parents out there listening, never, ever, ever, ever try to change your child's disposition or what God has made them. What you have to do is take what they are and who they are and try to channel that into a way of doing things that makes sense to them, and they're in their own comfort zone and they're at peace. I think that's the best word ever, being at peace with how you're going about things. So let's talk about momentum control. Those balance, so I think everybody understands now what I'm talking about, the how, the where, the when, and the why. But the when part is the momentum part, and this is the finishing touch. This is the last bit of it now. Now, momentum is the most powerful force in sport. It's maybe the most powerful force in your life. We've all had momentum swings in our lives. And if you knew how to can it when you had it, or you knew how to shut it down when the other person's have it, boy, wouldn't that be a magical power. And that's what I have worked for 35 years in trying to control. Can this awesome power of momentum be controlled? I say yes. Now, there's momentum things that there are big momentum changes that change the game of tennis. All right, let's just talk about that. Rain break, weather break, okay? Like you're ahead and it rains. Bad line calls, equipment breaking. Just things that are out of your control can change momentum swings. We all know that. But there are other things, too, that happen in a match that you see happening and you wonder, wow, that just changed all the momentum. Have you ever been up 40-love and not closed out the game? And then the other person gets the game and all of a sudden you can't make a ball and they just light on fire because it's sort of like in baseball having the bases loaded and you don't score a run and the next team comes up and knocks it out of the park and they get 5 runs in the next inning. Momentum swings happen a lot. There's a lot of commonalities with when they happen. Opportunities not seized, you know, and having a chance to win and not closing it out and letting a person live again. And we all know these things, but how to manage them when they do happen, that's the question we're going to try to answer in the next 25 to 30 minutes. So I've come up with the 5 variables to control momentum. Okay, now listen to these variables because all of them are important. Number 1, what is your best and favorite style of play? Now this is important. Most of the time a player falls into one of 3 categories. You're either an attacking baseliner, with or without the ability to be a counterpuncher. You might be a complete counterpuncher with average grinding abilities, or you might have an attacking game. So I call them usually a quick pressure. I put them into 2 categories, either a quick pressure or a delayed pressure player. Quick pressure player is a person that plays, serves and nerves, attacks a lot, big serves, tries to dictate from the first shot. Now, even if you're not a quick pressure player, there are quick pressure plays, serving and volleying. Wide and glide, you take the person out wide, you attack the second ball, and you come in. Hitting and charging or chipping and charging off of second serves. All of those are quick pressure tactics. You're trying to bring a point to a culmination or to an end where you're ramping up the pressure. Delayed pressure means you're trying to construct the point. A point is set up where you, if you just call it first exchanges, meet at the point, and closing the point. I used to chart this way all the time with players to try to see where their strengths and their weaknesses are. But quick pressure, at the start of the point, the first exchanges are the serve return and the server's first shot after the serve. The meat of the point is 5, 6, 7, 8, 12 rallies 15 rallies maybe to set up the ball where the player can try to close the point. And, of course, a good player on the other side of the net means that you have to construct more in order to get a simple shot or to be able to close the point. Think of it in terms of a basketball team. If you play a bad team, you can make two passes and get a good shot off. Against good teams, you might have to make 7, 8, 9, 10, 15 good passes to get a shot at all. That's what happens when you play against another good tennis player. And it's an incredible sport of stamina of the mind, stamina of the body, stamina of the strokes must hold up. But you need to understand what your best and favorite style of player is. And I'm going to go very quickly through this, but what I usually do is I will set up a chart, 1 to 10, rank yourself. I'll tell a player on a scale of 1 to 10 for your delayed pressure. How well do you grind? Let's say the player says, okay, I'm an 8. I'm pretty good off the ground. I'm not great. I lose to some, but I beat most. Then I say, okay, what is your ability to play quick pressure where you can apply pressure with your serve, your first strike potential? And let's say the player says, oh, I'm about a 6. You know, I've got just average there. All right, what is your ability to counter quick pressure? In other words, your counter-punching ability. So the counter-puncher, he says, oh, I'm great at that. I'm a 9, 9.5. When people come in, I can cut them up. And it's okay, so that's your game, and that's what we have to work with. It's real important to do this with a youngster. And by the way, they might have great physical skill. Physical skills might adapt to what we're talking about, but their mental and emotional skills, their emotional makeup may not. In other words, they might have a great quick-pressured body where they look big and strong and can knock the fool out of the ball, the cover off of it. But their temperament is just not wired to coming into the net or to bringing the point to a culmination. And it's really an interesting scenario. But people need to play according to their emotional temperament more than they need to just their physical prowess. Number one variable, that is a variable we're going to come back and talk about. And I'm just going to throw this out there. With this, if you had a delayed pressure player, listen to how important it is for a delayed pressure player to be able to attack. We will have the 75% rule in a few minutes when we talk about it, but for a delayed pressure player, you're going to play 3/4 of the time with your delayed pressure. And if you do not attack 25% of the time, delayed pressure player, you will always lose to that player that's one ball better than you in delayed pressure. And guess what? That person who has better offense then your countering abilities, you always lose to them. But if you know momentum control tactics, you can really have a great advantage, and you'll know exactly the right points, that 25% of the points, 2 or 3 out of 10, that you're going to attack them. Now, if you're a quick pressure player all the way, you're always going to lose to a person that is a little bit better quick pressure player, and you're going to always lose the person that counters better than you attack, unless 25% of the time you know when and how to use delayed pressure tactics. So I'm setting the table by talking about delayed pressure and quick pressure. Let's talk about the other four variables. Momentum based on score. Based on score. Everybody knows who's played tennis that your hands work a little better, you play a little better when you're behind than you do when you're ahead. When you're ahead, usually you miss first serves. You miss return of serves. Your feet get a little bit slow. You wait on the ball and overhit instead of going to the ball and staying smooth. You do the things sort of backwards because when your eyes look at the prize, they tell you many lies. And when you get ahead in the game, your hands break down until you get comfortable winning. When you get comfortable winning, the ultimate is when you can run with a lead or play well ahead. But until you get comfortable with the lead, parents and youngsters listening to this, you will play worse when you're ahead. And that's the critical thing you have to work through. You have to work through carrying leads. And, oh, my golly, this is why Noad is so disastrous. Players never learn the skill of carrying leads that they have to learn how to carry. no ad just cuts us up at our core, folks. I'm not going to go there, though. Let's go back and talk about momentum based on score. When you're behind, players know that you play a little bit better. Everybody plays better from behind. And if you play bad from behind, it's going to be a quick match. I tell players all the time that the first time they make a double fault when they're behind or miss an easy return or an easy ball on top of the net when they're behind, it's over quickly. You usually almost always play better from behind, worse when you are ahead. The confident player plays a little better when they are even. To manage this a little bit, I'll just give you a quick throw out there. When you're behind, it's about toughness. When you're ahead, it's about discipline. When you're even, it's about confidence. But when you're ahead, it's about discipline. It's people say, no, take a chance. No, you don't do that. When you're ahead in anything, it's about discipline. We'll come back to that. So, number one, my best and favorite style of play. Number two, momentum based on score. Number three, action-reaction momentum rules. Action-reaction. That means the things that happen simultaneously, just like a boxing match. Just like a boxing match. As I mentioned earlier in my monologue to start the program today, tennis, you go immediately from offense to defense, back to offense to defense, countering. Maybe you get off. You can't go from offense to offense. It's such an unbelievable game how where you have to construct points, not just hit balls. Action, reaction, momentum are very, very much like the action, reaction would be in boxing. Now, there's four ways to end a point. Or in tennis, there's four ways a point always ends. I'm playing you now. My good or my bad, you're good or you're bad. Is there anything else? Is there any other way that a point ends? You're good, you're bad, my good, my bad. All four of these have implications for how you should play the next point. Action reaction are these rules. My good, my bad, you're good, you're bad. By the way, if you're not confident, if you're not the favored player, you will usually do these in reverse. So what happens, I want to give you a little tease here. A lot of times, let's see, my bad, if I'm the underconfident player and I double fault, a lot of times if I'm intimidated, I will go for, instead of making a first serve, the next time, next point, I will overserve again and try to serve better, and I try to play better. I make an unforced error, then I, not good enough, I start spraying balls. I go to more and more errors. That's if I'm the underdog. If I'm the favorite and I make an unforced error when I am ahead, excuse me, not when I'm ahead, just when I make an unforced error, I will learn how to hit a body serve, a good first serve. Either quick pressure, delayed pressure. We'll talk about quick pressure and delayed pressure here with action reaction, how this fits in. But basically, folks, after my good or my bad, I go to my fundamentals. After I hit an ace, I'm going to make a first serve at the body. If I take a lead with an ace, I'm going to serve body the next serve. Okay, after my double fault, I'm going to hit body next serve. I'm going to hit four balls across the body and go delayed pressure after my good, my bad. After his good, her bad, I'm going to have the green light more. After her bad, his bad, I'm going to push the action a little bit, more quick pressure. Quick pressure service patterns might be going for the lines more. Green light is on here. After the other person's good, actually, if you're the favorite player, you will naturally ramp it up a little bit. If you're the underdog, you might get a little bit afraid after the other person's good. After the other person's bad, if you're the underdog, you might try to play it a little safe and hope for more errors. But if you're the favorite, you will ramp it up a little bit right there. Action, reaction, momentum rules. My best and favorite style is number one, momentum based on scores. Number two, ahead, behind, or even. Action, reaction, momentum rules. How did the point end? His good, his bad, my good, or my bad. Number four, conversion rules. The Bob Love conversion rules. Bob Love out of Louisville, Kentucky. years ago met with me, and he said, Coach, I heard you're studying about momentum principles. I said, I am. I believe it's the most powerful force in sport. I think if we could control this, you have the answer to all sports. He said, let me show you something here. And he took me and showed me the charting of volleyball matches. Now, at that time, volleyball was, I think, so much more of a beautiful game. You could only win when you were serving. You had side outs. And if you played good defense, you had an ability to offset the person who's just the team that just more electrifying and exciting. Now, these guys trying to push no ladder, trying to use volleyball, the rally scoring as the element that people like. And believe me, folks, it's not the scoring that brings people into watch these volleyball games. It's the fact that they get to play them on Friday night of a football weekend, and they're promoting the heck out of it. And there's more money probably being spent in volleyball than any other women's sport, basketball. There's lots of money being spent on women's sports to promote their sports. You know, we could do a lot better if we wouldn't have our matches at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a cold March day when people are still at work. And, you know, we have to really just think more in terms of how we're promoting. But the long and the short of it, I want to get back to the volleyball and Bob Love. Bob Love said, looky here, and he showed me graph paper charting. Bob showed me graph paper charting. You know, if you won the point, you go up. You lose the point, you come down. You lose up, down, up, 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 down, down, whatever. And then he said, here is how you chart. This is called flow charting. Three in a row starts the flow. Three in a row starts the roll. Three in a row starts the mow. There is a magic to three. Coincidentally, isn't this interesting that our sport, as I said at my monologue to start the program, that our sport is based on threes. If you don't win the first point of the game, you always have to win three in a row or four out of five. You must learn how to group points. Bob Love had this conversion rule about sports, and he would chart matches. In almost every match he showed me, when the player would win 3 points in a row, that would be the onset of the momentum and when it started to rain down on the other person and work for another person. So Bob Love's conversion rule is important. Five, rituals and routines between points. Here's something you can control. So these are the five variables that you can use to control momentum. Again, what's your favorite style of play, your best and favorite style of play? Number two, momentum based on score. Are you head, behind, or even? Number three, action-reaction momentum guidelines. What has just happened? Did you win the last? Was it your good, your bad, or your opponent's good, or your opponent's bad? Bob Love conversion rule. Three in a row starts the flow. Three in a row starts the mow. Number five, rituals and routines between points. Years ago, Jim Lehrer, the great Jim Lehrer, the sports psychologist, had a video out that I think has gotten more traction and more use than he could have ever dreamed. And that was on the routines between points. And Jim Lehrer, if you remember, he made a target of this, and he basically talked about being in the different zones where you were needed to be in the challenge zone in the middle. On the outside of the challenge zone was the choke zone, then the anger zone, then the tank zone. And Jim Lehrer's target bullseye of success has gotten a lot of use around the world with people who pay attention to this, but it's right on the money. But one thing is critical. The routines between points are critical. Now, the time between points, you have 25 seconds. I believe that's right, if I'm keeping it up with it right. But you have those 25 seconds that you're allowed to regroup or reignite your fire or whatever you have to do. Now, there are four ways you lose a point, or four ways you win or lose a point. The opponent's good, opponent's bad, you're good, you're bad. momentum can be controlled if you will pay attention to what you're doing between points. And believe me, again, once again, if you are the favorite, you do these in the right way, and if you keep a do the right things here, it really, really adds to your chances for success in the match. But after your good, your bad, I usually, or my own good, my own bad, or my player's own good, bad, I usually have them do a simple routine, take a little bit more time after their good shot, let it sink in, let them get over the hype of it. I usually have them go back and touch the fence and say, next right thing, play to win. Or keep it rolling, play to win. And they touch the fence. After my player's bad shot, I have them touch the fence, and they say, next right thing. Do the next right thing, play to win. Next right thing, play to win. Those six words really, really are important. When they do their routine, their rituals, where they'll look at their strings, they'll run in place, but they always, you can usually tell a player's played for me, they'll go back and they'll touch the fence after they hit a winner or they make an unforced error. After the opponent's good shot, I have my players say good shot and clap their rackets and turn around and sort of jog back and just say to themselves, in a battle today, keep battling. And you acknowledge the opponent's good shot and what that does and makes you play better. I always say you want your opponent to play good. Wanting them to play good does not make them play good. It makes you play better. When you want your opponent to play bad, that's the worst thing you could ever want, because if they don't play bad, you are in a heap of trouble and nowhere to go. And it's hard to change temperaments once you start the match. And if you, on the other hand, when they make a bad mistake, you can speed it up a little bit. So anyhow, here's how this works. I'm going to sort of give you the guidelines with the rhymes. I've only got about 10 minutes here. But the first one of these that you can do immediately, be aware of your style of game. That's number one. And be aware of where you go to when things are really falling apart, and hang on to those fundamentals. Now, again, 75% of the time you'll play your favorite style. If you understand momentum principles and you work on some quick pressure plays, if you are a delayed pressure player, for example, you learn how to hit and charge on a second serve. You learn how to do a wide glide or a body serve, attack your forehand and come in on a second ball. If you have a few plays that you can run, you can really, really ramp up your performances, and you don't get stuck. If you are a quick pressure player, you better have those few breakdown point patterns that we call them sometimes. If you are if you're playing and you need to be able to play 25% of the time, you need to be able to play delayed pressure tactics. Best and favorite style play. Now, your rituals and routines between points. Remember those things that go to Jim Lehrer, I think, is target of success. But really, the routines between points. Oh, I know what it was. It was 16-second cure. The 16-second cure, that was the Jim Lehrer video. Okay, folks, here we go. Here's the rules, though. Pay attention first, and these are the Chuck Creasy momentum tactics. Well, actually, first is the Bob Love conversion rule. Three in a row starts to flow. If you're playing crummy sometimes, your youngster is, just tell them, try to count. Try to win 3 points in a row. That's all. I cannot tell you the number of matches I've been able to help a player change by just saying, I want you to count to three, win three in a row, and you can change the momentum. Okay, that's a pretty basic one. With that, never allow the other person to get three in a row. Try to get three in a row for yourself always. If they get two in a row, you must attack on the. Do not ever, ever, ever allow your opponent to get three in a row. Do what it takes to prevent that conversion. All right, action reaction usually are where I go next in teaching players, because these are simple things that happen quickly. But the fundamentals of being ahead, being behind, being even are important. You've got to put them all together. Let's talk about action-reaction. Three in a row starts to flow is the Bob Love conversion rule. Okay, here we go. Action-reaction. His good, his bad. His good or her good. If they give you a whack, you hurt them right back. In other words, you play quick pressure against when they've just hurt you. Here we go, rhyme number three. If they make a bad mistake, a quick point you try to take. Now, don't start laughing at my poetry here, but this is the way I've had to work with college players and help them and get to remember them. Three in a row starts to flow. If they give you a whack, you hurt them right back. If they make a quick bad mistake, a quick point you try to take. Those are action reaction. Now, my good, my bad. After my good, if I've hurt them and they've started to bleed, delayed pressure to fester the wound is what I really need. In other words, after you hit an ace, body serve. After you come to net and knock off a big shot, four balls across the body to start the point, delayed pressure right after that. The fourth one, if my bad shot has me in a fret, regroup with my fundamentals and never start until I'm set. Well, I was struggling for a rhyme on that one, folks. Sorry. Let's go through them again. Bob Love's conversion rule. Three in a row starts to flow. Action, reaction. If they give you a whack, you hurt them right back. If they make a bad mistake, a quick point you try to take. If I've hurt them and they've started to bleed, delayed pressure to fester the wound is all I really need and after my mistake. If my bad mistake has me in a fret, regroup with my fundamentals, never start until I'm set. Now let's put it together with the score ahead. You know that you're going to play a bit worse. They're going to play a bit better when you're ahead because they're behind, you're ahead. Don't give them targets. When you're in the lead, stick them early in the game, but then slowly make them bleed. Now, if you're carrying a lead, I think the first point of the game is always important to exert your dominance. The first point of the game, don't be tentative there. But when you're in the lead, you stick them early in the game, then slowly make them bleed. When you're trying to come back and you're behind, when you're trying to come back, patient with your fundamentals, but always on the attack. Patience, go slow. Quiet mind, loud body. Quiet mind, loud body. When the score is tied, rule's really not that tough. Regular stuff is always good enough. When the score is tied, the rule is really not that tough. Stick with the fundamentals. Regular stuff is good enough. You got to go forward with your fundamentals. Now, how do we put all these together? Next week, I might tell you about the 75% rule. You're going to find out that your game style, score momentum, and action reaction are three variables. If two out of three say to attack, you're going to attack. If three out of three, you always do it. It overloads the situation to be a delayed pressure player 75% of the time if you are a delayed pressure player. 75% of the time, you'll be playing delayed pressure. You're basically going to have the, they will have had to hurt you. And also, you have to be behind to run your quick pressure play. And knowing when to open up that match with running the right play is a big key. Momentum, the most powerful force in sport. One more time through them. Three in a row starts to flow. If they give you a whack, you hurt them right back. If they make a bad mistake, quick point you try to take. If you've hurt them and they've started to bleed, delayed pressure to fester the wound is all you really need. If your bad shot has you in a fret, regrip with your fundamentals and never start until you set. Based on score, you're in the lead. Stick them early in the game and slowly make them bleed. If you're trying to come back from behind when you're going to play better, be patient, but always on the attack. If score's tied, rule's not that tough. Regular stuff is always good enough. And folks, it has been a pleasure talking about tennis again. And it's been a pleasure, again, being with you on American Tennis. Next week, we'll be back at a regular time on Wednesday at noon. And enjoy the rest of the UR Tennis programs. This is Chuck Creasy.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family. Sam. He's got the red, white, blue, fine high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spend a little more in the store for a tattoo.
And it has very little to do with a win or a loss. Stand a fight out there, folks. Stand up and speak out. Stand up, speak out. Say those things need to be said. This is American tennis, the American tennis way. It's our right, it's our privilege, but it's also our duty. See you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.